Before we commence, let us take a few moments to remind ourselves how lucky we are to be in receipt of Lord Buddha's teachings. And with this immense gratitude, let's take a moment to worship the Supreme One, the infinitely compassionate one, the sublime one, the Supreme Buddha. To do so, join me in chanting Namaskara 3 times.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
They say that it is human to make mistakes, but to forgive is divine. And it's very interesting, that is. It is human to make mistakes, or it's, instead of using human, but we can use, you know, it's okay to make mistakes. But to forgive is divine. Something that we have to keep in mind, no matter what we do, is that mistakes can and will happen. And that's okay. Now, this is not saying that anyone's made a mistake. Don't overthink about this. Right? But in our lives, mistakes do happen. And it's okay. Because what we have to keep remembering is we only have a body and a mind. And this mind is always under our control, right? We can control our mind completely, right? Of course not. Our mind arises with different ideas at different moments, at different time periods. And ideas will arise. And whenever you have an idea, do you ever think your idea is wrong or incorrect? Because it arises in your mind, you think it's always right. And so when you do it, you make a mistake. Now, the question is, do arahants also make mistakes? No, they're all perfect human beings, aren't they? They don't make mistakes, surely. Do they? Of course they do. That's the thing, it is human to make mistakes. It's very, very human to be able to make a mistake. But to forgive is divine. You see, sometimes if we feel it to be very difficult to forgive one another, because you come to this idea that, you know, they did something. They said this to me, they said that to me. And you automatically give them the label that this is who they are, that they are this sort of person. Now, especially when you're living among lots of people, and we've talked about this before, we continue to give people labels for something that they've said or something they've done. You give them a label and you say, Usually sometimes we give them nicknames as well. If you remember your schooling years, you gave others nicknames. Sometimes they were not as nice as they should have been. but you give them a nickname because of something they've said or something you've done, and it sticks. And no matter what, you continuously see them in this light. However, forgiveness is divine. Now, who are we trying to forgive here? Who are we trying to forgive? If making the mistake is human, or if making a mistake is normal, then who are we trying to forgive here? Because if we have an answer to that, who? There's something wrong. There has to be something wrong. Because why we know, every answer to the question who can only stem from what? Ignorance. Every answer to the question who will always stem from ignorance. Is it not? Who did that? No. Not who. What should you ask yourself? Instead of saying, who did that? The best question is, what happened? And how did it happen? You see, whenever something has happened, you don't always look at who. Because who is always rooted in ignorance. Because if you can only answer the question who, if your mind is going through a defilement process, if ignorance, attachment, vexation, insanity mode, and then the sense of self or sense of fixedness will always give you the answer to who. For example, who's listening? Who's talking? Who are you going to offer alms to in the evening or at noon? If you have the answer, that's rooted in ignorance. So instead, what we have to do is we have to understand that, you know, people make mistakes, right? People make mistakes, right? Right? Sure? People make mistakes? Mind can make mistakes. People are perfect, right? People are perfect. Minds, not so perfect. They've got small flaws here and there, because why? It's the mind, right? The mind arises, the mind passes away, the mind has an idea, right? The mind works according to what? According to its views. A good example would be, say you're hungry. Say you're hungry. You know, we all feel hunger. Anyone here doesn't feel hungry? Right? Hopefully everyone had breakfast, right? Hopefully. So you are now no longer hungry, but you were hungry. When you were hungry, let's say you saw a packet of biscuits, right, just lying somewhere on a table, not yours. Now, do we go and take the packet to eat it if you're hungry? Now, your normal answer would be, no, I don't do that. I will stay hungry until I get, you know, my meals. I won't go and take this biscuit and eat these biscuits. Because why? That's not who I am. But that's not how it works, is it? See, what we have to remember is, you know, doing something isn't entirely because you are doing what is always right. So, in science, they call it the animalistic mind. Right? Inside of each and every one of us, because we evolved from animals, therefore we have instincts, animalistic instincts. So, if you're hungry, you're hungry, and you want food. If you're thirsty, if you're scared, your body will go into an instant change of going to get it. Then we have a more intellectual part of our mind, or part of our brain, which is looking at, is this good? Is this bad? Should I be doing this? Should I be doing that? And in the middle of all that is, they call it the operator. should I do what the animal mind is, animal brain is saying, or should I do the intellectual thing? And so people are come to this idea that, you know, all of this is controlled. There is the operator that controls whether I'll be animalistic, right, and, you know, not think about anyone else and take the packet of biscuits, or I'll be the more intellectual part, and they'll say, you know, this is not mine, this is that. But the mind doesn't work according to what we choose. The mind works according to the views that we hold. For example, if you hold the view, as I think most of you do, stealing is wrong, would you go and take the biscuits? Is it no? Is the answer no? It is no until a certain extent. When you reach this extent, now you won't steal unless, until a certain extent. If the mind is put under so much pressure, and for as long as you have ignorance, you won't think twice before doing it. For example, you are really, really hungry, right? And you see the packet of biscuits. You are absolutely starving. You look around and you see no one there, right? So you're trying to tick boxes here. Okay, no one's there, so it belongs to who? No one. And then you try to make it feel okay. And once it feels okay, now you take the biscuits and eat. Now, so you can make a mistake. That's okay. But the question is, can you forgive yourself? Can you forgive yourself when you make a mistake? Or do you find it pretty difficult to forgive yourself? So for example, you made a mistake by saying something to someone that hurt their feelings. We don't do that, do we? Of course not. But when it happens, do you find it difficult to forgive yourself for, you know, you made a mistake and now you find the need to, you know, apologize not once, not twice, for hundreds of thousands of times? Because why? You still don't feel right. Something is wrong here. Because I'm finding it really hard to forgive myself. If that is so, that means we still have something to do here, right? Because how can you forgive someone else if you can't forgive yourself? Because why? Remember, everything stems inside to out. If you can forgive yourself, can you only forgive someone else? If you can't forgive yourself, can you truly forgive someone else? Can you? If you make a mistake and you spend the next week thinking about it, thinking, oh, why did I do such a thing? Why did this happen? Why did I say this? Why did I do this? Why did I think this? For example, I've had several people come up to me, and I've heard people have somehow sometimes get the ideas. You know what? What happens if they get the idea of, you know, I don't like Amma, I don't like Tata, I wish they were dead. Children have those sort of thoughts. But then the next moment they think, I should not think that. That's so wrong. I don't know. What am I gonna do? Is that Aryapuada, or is that one of the heinous crimes? And what am I gonna do? And they go to Amma, they go to Tata, and they apologize. Sometimes they don't go to Amma and Tata. They go to, you know, someone they trust and go, you see, this happened. I had this sort of thought. And they continuously live in that thought. And they think, oh, I did that, I did this, I did that, I did this. And they're stuck. They can't forgive themselves. But then they say they can forgive other people. But can they? If you can't forgive yourself, can you truly forgive someone else? No, because if you feel that you if you can give yourself a label, how can you say you're not giving someone else a label? See, we all have to learn that forgiveness should always come from inside. Forgiveness should always come from yourself. You have to first forgive yourself. Then can you truly forgive someone else? Then can you only forgive someone else if you cannot forgive yourself? You cannot truly forgive someone else. It has to always come from inside. Because remember, the external world is a creation, or is a perception that the internal world feels. It's a projection. Which means what you are seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching is part of the mind. So, if you can see a person and you can't forgive the person, how can you forgive yourself? You see, we have to keep understanding. We have to come to the understanding that this world is, number one, a mental perception, and number two, that everything happens according to its reasons. Everything happens according to the causes. When the causes align, does the effect manifest? So you doing what you have done, or what has happened, is what has supposed to have happened. Let me give an example. Sometimes you can find yourself overthinking. Something small happens, but you start to think about this and you start to overthink about this. For example, I start off by saying mistakes are human and forgiveness is divine. Some people can happen because this is the mind, isn't it? May think, okay, what was the mistake that happened? Who made the mistake? How is it? Did I make a mistake? Did they make a mistake? Did someone make a mistake? That's overthinking, and that's okay. However, if you find yourself overthinking, sometimes you can find the mind run in all corners. For example, you ask a teacher, right, one of your teachers, a question. You're not satisfied with the answer. And then you go and tell another teacher. You like this answer. If you feel guilty that, I asked a question one time to this person, this teacher. Teacher didn't give me a good answer. But it almost feels like I'm turning my back to them. I'm turning my back to them and I'm going to a different teacher. And I feel really guilty about it. That shouldn't be. I should see them all to be equal or whatnot. If you overthink it and you start to think that I'm such a bad person. Why did I do such a thing? Why did I say something? Why did I do something to hurt another person? See, what we have to understand is that this is the mind. That the mind is something that arises and passes away according to the causes. If the causes are aligned, then what happens is perfect. An example that comes to my head is, our mind is basically like using a computer or a laptop. Sometimes when you're online and you're doing something, suddenly like something pops up and it says, "Oh, sign up to our newsletter," or something pops up and says, "You can buy this 20% off." Are any of you annoyed at you? Do you think that, oh, I'm such a horrible person because something popped up? Do you ever think, I'm such a terrible person because if something popped up and it says sign up to our newsletter? Or log into our website to get free benefits? Just because something popped up, you don't think that you're a bad person, do you? No, you think, oh, it's a pop-up. So what do? If you want to join their newsletter, you log in. But normally we find these really, you know, distracting, and so we just close it and we carry on with life. We don't think about it again. Why did that happen? Was it wrong? Was it right? We don't think about it. We just close it and we leave. We move on with life. Same thing with our mind. Our mind at a moment can pop up with some random, weird and wonderful things. Is that you who had the pop-up? Is it you who had the pop-up? If it is you, well, this laptop is also you then. No, it popped up according to, you know, I'm not good with any websites, but I'm guessing there's probably coding behind that. And it just pops up according to the causes. It pops up, you read it, because you can't stop yourself from reading. Right? You can't physically go blind on that spot and say, okay, there's nothing here. And all you see is the X. You see it, you read it. Because why? What is the mind? The mind is to identify, to know and identify. Right? To go from Rupa Vedana Sankara, you perceive. That's okay. But you're not annoyed that, you know, it popped up. Instead, what do? You close. And you move on. So when your mind comes up with different ideas, sometimes could be good. Sometimes could be bad. It's a pop-up. So what should you do? If it's a wholesome thing that you need to do, well, you follow up. If it's something that you think is wrong that I shouldn't have thought that, then what should you do? Close and move on. Okay, this is the reason. See, this is true to almost everything that happens in the mind. Every mind is like a pop-up. For as long as we have ignorance and attachment, anger, in big or small forms, will arise in the mind. When it arises, what should we do? Think how terrible I am. Wow, laptop, I'm so bad because my laptop has given me a pop-up. I'm so bad. You know, I'm a horrible person. Is that what should you do? No, you identify. Okay, a pop-up has popped up. A pop-up has come up. Okay. We identify that, you know, I am angry. You identify that the mind has come and has arisen, and it's with dvesha. Is that a bad thing? Is that a horrible thing? You know, is that the end of the world? Is it? No, we shouldn't be angry, should we? You know, it's not good to be angry. No, we identify, okay, anger has arisen. Who's angry? You can't give an answer to that. Because why? The causes have aligned, so a mind arises. And when the mind arises, thanks to our defilement process, we feel what? Aversion. We feel aversion. We identify, okay, there's aversion. Now, all we have to do is look at the cause and effect nature of what? Aversion. Who is angry? Question is wrong. How did anger arise? Now you look at what? Ignorance, attachment, right? This gave rise to the vexation. Vexation gave rise to what? To the insanity mode. Insanity mode gave rise to Now, when we say insanity, give, you know, when we talk about, you know, ignorance, attachment, vexation, insanity mode, to jati, or the sense of self, or the sense of fixed, or jati, don't they feel to be like different parts? As in, doesn't it feel to be like this leads to this, leads to this, leads to this? However, this process isn't this to this to this to this. It's more that when this happens, we call it what? Abhisankara. When this happens, we call it what? Insanity mode. When this happens, we call it what? Vexation. Not that, you know, ignorance. Because ignorance and attachment are almost conditions. The two of the conditions that take on, right? It's not that the mind is after ignorance and attachment, there's vexation. It's not that this, then this, then this. Instead, when ignorance and attachments are factors of the mind, then the process, the final process, will use those two causes or use those two factors to give rise to a different effect. And that effect we call what? Vexation. Or was it that vexation was created? Was vexation created? No, this is a process. So insanity mode is when the vexation goes on to a certain level. Like we say that when it goes to a certain level, that it flicks on, or as a safety process or safety procedure, it goes insane. But it almost feels as though, you know, Abhisankara and Jati, these are all different things. One and another, these can be separated. But can they? No, they're part of the same process here. They are both different moments of this cycle. So when the vexation, when the mental pressure exceeds a certain limit, then Abhisankara happens. When Abhisankara happens, then it's not that after Abhisankara happens, then you feel jati. Because of the new cause, the effect changes, or the effect manifests. And we call that effect what? Jati. So coming back to this, so when you are angry, you automatically internalize that anger is part of me. All problems are, you know, I'm facing this big problem. This problem is mine. And we hold and we grab and we store this as part of me. So this jati thinks that I am angry. Like, for example, like lots of animations would create the idea that, you know, that we have anger, we have jealousy, we have joy, all stored in our mind. And at one moment, anger comes in, and then they move back and give a chance for joy, give chance for other emotions. However, that's not how the mind works. The mind doesn't have anger inside of it. Anger isn't part and parcel of the mind. Instead, what? Anger is where? Anger is an effect that appears, that manifests because of our defilement process. Because of our defilement process, anger arises. First and foremost, what we have to do is we have to understand that anger is who? Anger is part of who? We have to understand that it's not part of who, that it's a part of this process, this mind process, we identify that we're angry. We identify that there's aversion. We identify that there's desire. We identify that, you know, I'm feeling more here. We identify what is happening, and then what? We look at why. Look at the cause and effect nature. Because once you see the cause and effect nature, now you come and you think, oh, wait, this is all because of ignorance. Right? Normally, when once you start thinking about the cause and effect nature, everything, so desire, aversion, delusion, is rooted where? From ignorance. And ignorance is not the reality of the world. Ignorance is it's not something that is true. That's why anger is wrong. Because it stems from a fallacy. It's something that grows from a fallacy. Something that's not real. That's why it's wrong. Not that, you know, I'm angry, being angry is wrong. No, because it stems from ignorance. Ignorance, or in other words, thinking that the world is, well, not understanding the nature of nature. Not understanding what nature is. When you understand what nature is, can you be angry? Can you be angry? If you don't understand what, if you understand nature, can you be angry? No. Okay, let's try something else. Desire. Is desire bad? Desire is rooted in ignorance, therefore it shouldn't be something part of the mind. However, is desire bad? Desire is not bad. So if you feel desire, if you feel a modicum of desire, is that who you are? No, that is part, that is the effect that the mind felt. We're very quick to label. We are very quick to label. That's why you'll hear a lot of people saying, you know what, you know, I'm a Raga character, I'm a Dvesha character, I'm a Moha character. You know, I tend to have more Moha than the rest. I tend to have more Raga than the rest. And you give yourself a beautiful label. Why were you angry? Because, you know, I just have a Dvesha character. I'm just more Dvesha than Raga, so, you know, this is why I'm angry. This is why I'm upset. Right? Because that's who I am. But is it? Can an arahant say that, you know, I used to, you know, this mind had the tendency to be a moha character, or this mind is a moha character, but I came out of that? No, the mind arises according to its causes. At one moment, you feel raga. So, people who feel, so, to give like a brief outline, they say that everyone is either a raga, a dvesha, or a moha character. And they do say that people who are more of a moha character find it more difficult to attain nibbana. Because why? Moha is like ego, it's pride. People who are raga and dvesha, these are what people, a lot of people tell everyone. That, you know, dvesha is very easy to see, you can see if someone's angry, right? Desire is less than that. So if you have aversion, if you're a virginous, or if you are the adjective of aversion character, it's easy to attain nibbana, because why? It's very clear that you're angry, and therefore your teachers can help you, and you can do this. If you're more of a desire person, well, it still is very easy, because you know you would go to your teacher and tell your teacher the ins and outs of you, and your teacher will help you and help you attain Nibbana. However, moha people are very, very difficult to attain Nibbana because why? Because of your pride and ego, you would hide everything from everyone and make sure no one sees this. And even if you go to your teacher, you only show half the story. That's the thing they say. But is your mind a raga, dvesha, or moha character? What is your mind? Which one is your mind? I hands up, you're a raga character. Well, none of you should have your hands up. Hands up if you're a dvesha character. Hands up if you're a moha character. No. At one moment, the mind will arise. And the mind will arise with different levels of raga, dvesha, moha. Next moment, is it because of this mind, the next mind will arise with the different, with the same levels? Is it because of... It's like saying, is it because of this leaf was made? Was this leaf the cause of this leaf? No, but these leaves were probably from the same tree, right? So if this was the older leaf, this had some effect on this leaf. But is this the reason for this? No. That's why every mind is almost... You can say they're independent. However, they do have a connection to the previous mind. That's why you can think. That's why all your thoughts are connected. Because every thought has a connection to the next mind. However, they are not dependent on each other. So just because you feel raga now, doesn't mean the next moment you will feel raga. If that is so, we'll continuously be just feeling one feeling. If you're angry, you'll always be angry. If you feel desire, you always will feel desire. But is that so? No, your mind will change accordingly. For example, now what? Is your mind feeling desire, aversion, delusion? But it will change. And for example, if we got some glass and we drop the glass, I don't know, you hear the sound of babies crying. Some people find the sound of babies crying unbearable. I remember certain friends, if we were in a public place and they hear a baby crying, they have to leave the room and they can't handle it. So if we had a baby cry now, do we still feel the same feeling that we felt? No. Because why? The mind is what? Cause and effect. Cause and effect. Well, we have to continuously come to this idea. See, this is the thing. Whenever you're doing whatever you're doing, we should always have this feeling that, you know. So this is a question that a lot of people ask, and myself has also asked this question. Right? So to my teachers, I've been like, sorry, nonsense. How do I practice the path while, say, doing this? So how do I, you know, I say, for example, I've been given this responsibility. Say, for example, my responsibility is to sweep this area. I'm given this responsibility. How can I practice the path while sweeping? And my teachers, every time I've asked this, my teachers tell me one thing. Don't. What do you mean, don't? Like, aren't I supposed to be practicing the path while sweeping? You say, don't. When you're doing what you're doing, focus on what you're doing. And simply ask yourself, while you're doing it, ask yourself, who's doing this? Who? Why? And how? So please, just when you're doing this, whatever you're doing, whether, I don't know, you're climbing a tree or you're digging a hole or, you know, whatever you're doing, right? Whatever you guys do, and whatever you all do in your time, ask yourself these three questions: who, why, and how. So I remember coming from a teacher, and he says, no, don't practice the past. Just don't. When you are doing something, you do it. Focus on what you're doing and ask yourself these three questions. Because what is practicing? What is practicing? Giving answers to these three questions: who, how, and why. Practicing the path is answering these three questions. Because we come to this feeling that, you know, to practice the path is completely different to what I'm doing. For example, you know, the question that we all have is, you know, how can I do something? How can I practice the path when I'm using my mind? For example, let's say you have the task of reading some text. How can I practice the path of reading this text? I can't do that. Well, that's a question I used to have. Like, if I am told to read this, when I'm reading this, how can I practice the path? Because why? I have to be focused on what I'm reading, or else if I'm thinking about the unending nature of this text, that means I'll be reading this for the next 5 years or so. So what should you do? As you're reading, you read and ask yourself, who, how, and why? Or who, why, and how? Or why, who, and how? Or however, these three questions. Because once you ask these three questions, while you're reading, you will be reading. However, you will also, while you're reading, try to be answering these questions. Because practicing the path, taking steps towards Nibbana, isn't something separate. So it's not like, this is life, right? And this is the practice. They aren't two separate things here. They are not two completely separate things. Instead, they're the same thing. Instead of having two things, they are both one big block that should happen. However, because in our life, we haven't been, throughout our infinitely long journey in samsara, practicing the path was as minute as not even like a speck of dust. It's like one micro, I don't know, whatever. Like so small compared to the rest of our samsaric journey. So we automatically have this idea. We come with this view that, you know, practicing the path is something separate to life. Simply put, say you have a job, right? So today is we have Dakkhine, right? So everyone will proceed something for the Buddha Puja, right? When you are proceeding, if somehow as you are proceeding, you become an arahant, right? Will the proceeding change? Will you proceed the Buddha Puja in a different way? Just imagine, like one moment you're walking and you become an arahant, right? Will you change the way you're taking the Buddha Puja? I know, will you have an extra bounce in your step? Will you start taking longer strides? Will your gait change? No, instead it's what? You'll keep walking, you'll keep doing what you're doing. However, only one thing has changed. Only one thing has changed. And that's just the switch of what? Ignorance. So everything will still go on as it is, except you won't feel what? Jati. So when an arahant is reading, do they read and then think, I'm reading this, I'm going to have to think separately while reading, I'm going to have to think separately about the anicca nature of this reading, this text? No, as they're reading, they feel the anicca nature. That's how it works. So life and the practice aren't two separate things. They're both the same thing. Part two, they are life, and practice of path is basically life. While you're doing whatever you are doing, all you have to do is ask yourself these three questions, and that is the practice. Okay, let's take an example. Best example. You are going to take a shower. I remember I used to have this question. Is water wet? Is water wet? It has to be wet, right? You put anything into water, the water makes anything wet. So water should be wet, right? I don't know. You take this cloth, you put it into water, it becomes wet. You take this mic, you put it into water, the mic becomes wet. Right? You put these leaves into water, the leaves become wet. So shouldn't water itself be wet? Water should be wet. Or, before you take a shower or take a bath, especially in Sri Lanka, right? You automatically have this idea that the water is what? The water is what? Cold. It's cold. No, it's just cold. And then you put your hand in and you think, no. Because too cold, no, I can't. And then you close your eyes and jump into the water and you're like, oh, okay, good. So, is water cold? Is water wet and cold? Because that's what water is, right? Water is wet and water is cold. See, when you're taking a shower, there's something to think about, isn't there not? You think about, okay, who? Who is showering? Who is taking the shower? Okay, I'm moving across, right? And I see, I'm every step I take forward. See, when even when you're walking, ask yourself, who is walking? The human body is one of the most amazing pieces of life or of the world that you will ever, that I've ever learned. Because movement itself, you being able to walk, it's almost like a miracle, is it not? You don't think about it. All you do is you think, I'm going to walk forward, and your body complies, and you're moving forward. If you just take a moment to think about movement itself in general. Now, you've all seen robots, right? I don't know, you've probably seen these videos of robots doing things, and you see how robotic they are. So they'll to pick something up, they go very robotic. But humans, we have this almost fluid like motions that we're able to do things without feeling so robotic, and that's all thanks this amazing muscular like structure, the muscles, the nerves, the veins, the beautiful systems of the body. And sometimes it seems like magic. I'll tell you this, and I think I'll show you, I think next week, I'll show you the video of this as well, because it's amazing. There's a certain protein in the body. And there are trillions, and I think it's like over a trillion of them in every cell. And they walk. These proteins walk. And you probably won't believe me because you've not seen it. They have two legs and they walk from one side of the cell to another. Automatically, right? They walk and they have a massive bag of stuff they have to move. Automatically you see this and you think, what? That's a thing. There has to be something that has to be, you know, they have some sort of brain, they're walking. Literally, they go one step, two step, three step, and I think every second they can take over 100 steps. Steps. This is the part of the human body, because the human body, see, take my word for this, I'll show it to you next time, right? Proteins walking. It seems so strange because when we see protein, because we know proteins are very simple structures made from atoms and whatnot. And to see them walk, because we have attributed the idea of walking to beings, the action of walking can only happen from beings. So seeing a chemical move, very strange, but that's nature. So coming back to taking the shower, right? You have to always ask yourself, who? Who is actually going and taking a shower? Who? Why? Why am I showering? Because when you ask yourself why, this is where you get merit. Why? Why do we shower? Why do we shower? You know, you can survive pretty much your entire life without showering. Like I think either Guru Hamdaru or a monk had explained this to us. You know, if we stop showering, first day, you'll feel a bit icky, right? You'll be like sticky and... Second day, you feel really dirty and, you know. But when it comes to a week, you don't care. After a week, your body gets so normalized that you no longer need to take a shower. Because it's called being nose blind. You can't smell. Like, for example, the people near you will know this. Every person, like you yourself, has a specific scent. You yourself have a specific scent, right? And that's how the body works, right? But can you smell it? But if someone else can smell it, like if you went into a place that you stay, for example, a room, right? Your room. You go into your room, you may not smell the smell that it has, because why? You're so normalized to it. However, when someone external comes in, they take one whiff and they'll faint on the floor. Because our body is used to getting normal to things, right? To normalize things, finding ways to be normal, come to a normal state. And there are science behind that, but forgetting the science, we are taking a shower. Why? For our benefit. Really? Is it for our benefit? See, you can take it to be your benefit, but it also is for the benefit of all sentient beings, is it not? If you ask yourself why am I showering, you can actually come to the answer that I'm doing this in benefit of all sentient beings. And it's not saying that all of you are very smelly people. No. Opposite. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, because you are showering, you are creating the environment for yourself and other people to come, listen, and practice. And when you understand, what do you do with your understanding? Keep it to yourself, right? Whenever you understand something, you keep it to yourself. Yes? You don't tell anyone. No, when you understand something, the first thing you do is you go and tell someone. Someone that you use a noble companion, you go and you tell them, you know, today I learned this. And they, and you learn and they learn, and you are helping one another. So you are showering for who? You are showering for who? All sentient beings. So ask yourself, who, how, and then how, who, why, and then how. How is showering happening? Now you look at the process, the cause and effect, this process nature. This process nature. So, because when you see water, you automatically think it's what? That it's wet. It's cold. So, for example, I have a bottle of water. I don't carry bottles of water in my pockets, don't worry. I just wanted to bring this here. You see this water. Automatically, what are your presumptions? What are you presuming? This water, it's wet. I think everyone assumes that water is wet. It's cold, and I don't know, it has a almost, I don't know, can you see this? It's slightly, like, has a slight, like, it's not clear, but it's kind of clear. So what are your presumptions? By looking at this, what are you assuming? It's wet, it's cold, and maybe it's not drinking water. Now, so you have already assumed that this is wet. But what is being wet? Define being wet. Is water wet? Water is not wet, actually. Water is dry. But water has the ability to do what? To make things wet. So, for example, if you were to put your hand into water, why do we say that my hand is wet? Why do we say that? Because our hand has what? Water droplets everywhere. But we automatically, because we can only say it's wet because we perceive it. When it's in a bottle, is it wet? Is water wet? No, water is just water here. Water is in a certain, You know, sometimes you see something and you think, you automatically think it to be, sticky. Because when you see something, though, you see a liquid on the floor and it looks wet. Right? It looks wet. Sometimes you can automatically have this idea that this is sticky, that this is cold, that this is, this is like this, this is like that. And we have these pre-assumptions. Therefore, sometimes we come to this idea that we don't like this. We don't like the cold, do we? Lots of people don't like getting into cold showers. If it's a hot shower, then it's okay because it's warm. But cold? No. That's why you have to force yourself to jump into the cold water, because you don't like the cold. But you assume that all water is cold. But cold is something that happens what? Cold happens when your body comes into contact. So coldness is what? A mental perception. Wet is what? A mental perception. So when water is in a bottle, is it cold and is it wet? It's only when it comes onto your hand can you say it's cold. So for example, I can tell you this is not wet. Oh, sorry. I can tell you this is not cold. Because it's been here, although this used to be hot water. Oh wait. It's not cold or warm, it's normal. It's like a room temperature. So we automatically come up with these pre-assumptions. For example, now if we were to touch, say, something that's metal, is metal hot or cold? So this is I think aluminium. If I was to touch this, is metal hot or cold? Or if I was to give you two materials, if I was to give you plastic and I was to give you metal, which one is colder? Normally when you touch, which one is it colder? So we have got metal and we've got plastic. We have two things, two materials here. Which one seems cold and which one seems like normal? When you touch metal, that is cold, right? But then when you touch something like plastic, that is normal. But if we took the temperature of both these materials, which one is actually colder? Which one is actually colder? Actually, these both should be 26 degrees Celsius. If these are correct. So these both should be, the temperature should be 26 degrees Celsius. Everything here should be 26 degrees Celsius. However, when you touch metal, metal is cold. Why is that? Why is metal cold? Because metal has a quality. And that quality is what? Metal has the condition, has the quality of conducting. So when you, because our senses are to sense the outside world, right? So when we are to touch something, metal has the ability to conduct. So it takes your heat, or not your heat, takes the heat from the hand and absorbs it. Because that's what metal can do. Because of the lack of heat in your hand or in next to your senses, you say it's what? Cold. But then this is an insulator. So you touch this, will the heat be absorbed? No. So you touch this and you say, oh, that's room temperature. But we automatically have this assumption that this is cold. However, this is what? This is the same as this, temperature-wise. So even with water, is water cold? Water also has the quality of what? Conducting. You put your hand inside, we've all learned this. This is why you can't fry with water. I've always had this idea, as a small kid, you see Amma, right? You see your mothers putting oil into pans and frying. I've always asked, why do they put oil? Can't they do with water? If you heat water up, can't we fry things with water? But you can't. Why? Because water takes a lot of energy to heat up. Takes a lot of energy to heat up, whereas oil doesn't. So water, if you put, that's why we sweat. Why do we sweat? Good. So people who go to school, you should know this. Why do you sweat? Why do we sweat? Because what does sweat do? It cools the body. How? it creates, it put, you put this layer of liquid on the, on, no, the way of layer of water and salt onto your body. And then what? It evaporates, taking the heat with it. So water seems cold because why? It takes heat. But is water actually cold? Is water actually cold? See, we have to ask ourselves, is it? Is it cold? So you going into a shower, into a cold shower, is the water cold? No. I think the best something that happens, especially in the monastery, is that some of our waters, our showering water sources, are outside in the sun. On really sunny days, and you take a shower in the night, you are literally bathing in warm water. But no matter what, you look at it and you think, what? This water is cold. You're like, okay. And when you put the first bucket, or you turn on the valve, right, you feel the warm water and you're like, okay, good. Some days, even though it's really sunny, but it's like rained, you touch the water and you are so surprised that it's water. Why? It should have been ice. It's so cold. Again, why do we come up with these assumptions? It's because we give the attribute of cold and wet to water. But is water cold and wet? Is water cold and wet? Is this cold? No, this is a mental perception that we project onto things. What we have to do is we have to ask ourselves. You see, practicing the path is just asking these three questions. No matter what you do, no matter what you see. Who, how, and why? Who, how, and why? Just ask yourself. Ask yourself this today, tomorrow, next week. Ask this until you die. Who, why, who, how, and why? Three questions. That is practicing the path. Because to answer these questions, what are you going to have to use? Anicca, dukkha, anatta. Is it something separate from your life here? No, of course not. This should be part and parcel of what we do in every day. You see, today, when I had my last teacher's meeting, I felt very fortunate. Very fortunate. Because practicing the path is so, it's difficult, but so easy. Difficult because we haven't practiced this throughout our samsaric journey. But it's such an easy thing. All you have to do is ask these three questions and give them answers. Using the Dhamma. You see, as you're practicing the path, something that we should all have by now is this feeling of immense compassion towards all sentient beings. In other words, we should always be feeling this metta, this loving, it's not loving kindness, this loving kindness to every single person. Shouldn't we? Because every single person around us is feeling what? What are they feeling? What are they feeling? They are feeling jati. They are feeling this sense of self. Meaning what? Each and every person is suffering. You know how we have the Aramaiti meditation. Actually, this shouldn't be a meditation. Aramaitri is something that comes from inside. It's something that comes from it's internally something that you think about. Because once you understand how much suffering that you are going through, automatically you think about the people around you. When you understand that jati is creating all this, is messing with everything here, you automatically think about the other people around you. Now, all of you, I know, have this. That's why whenever you see someone from another country, right, or someone from outside the monastery come in, automatically, all of you give them your 100%. I've seen this. Whenever someone comes in, I will see the Shravikas who has used to go up and talk to them. And it's such a wonderful sight. Because why? They are trying to help the other person to the maximum they possibly can. Have compassion. Because we should... We, by understanding the Dhamma inside of us, by practicing the path inside of us, our Maitri should continuously bubble. Metta should always continuously bubble, no matter what. As you are practicing, it should be something that happens naturally. Think about this, right? So in the RMI through meditation, right? The English, it says, may I and all beings in all worlds be free from the fire of desire, aversion, delusion, jati, and all of this. Yes, it's a meditation. However, it should be something that comes from inside of us. It should be something that comes from the very core of us. Because why? Once you understand the problems that you are facing, other people are facing it too. Other people around you are facing it too. This is why the Buddha says, use metta to like a vehicle. Use it, practice it like a vehicle. Morning, night, doing whatever you're doing, use it like that. Because why? It's something that you can do all the time. But remember, to do something externally, you have to do it internally as well. That's why it's may I and all beings in all worlds. Because it's very, very, you can say it's very selfish. Why are you wishing for yourself? Shouldn't you wish for other people? But you can only wish for other people once you wish for yourself. May I and all beings in all worlds. Because why? It's only beings that are suffering, aren't they? Is this bottle of water suffering? If I drop this onto the tile floor, is this bottle going to suffer? Will the bottle be like, no... Don't throw me onto the tile floor. I don't want to shatter. Would you ever hear the bottle say this? No. Instead, what? Beings meaning minds with ignorance and attachment are constantly on fire. Are constantly in this state of what? Jati. See, may I and all beings in all worlds be free from the fire of desire. If you think about this, just by just thinking about, you should be able to think about that one line for hours, shouldn't you? May I and all beings in all worlds be freed from the fire of desire. That one line, you can actually think about that one line for the rest of your journey, can't you? Inside that, it has Nibbana inside. Your entire journey is inside that. Because why? Our Maitri is something that we should have from within. Our Maitri should be something that's constantly in our minds. Whenever you meet someone, whenever you do anything with anyone, you should constantly have our Maitri for yourself as well as the other person. See, when you help someone, ask yourself, again, why? Why am I helping this person? See, if you're helping this person to make yourself feel good, that's not the way. If you're helping the person so the other person thinks that you're good, that's not the way. If you're helping someone for merely the merits, you should always help someone knowing that this person is a mind and a body. And this mind has what? Ignorance and attachment. Therefore, they have what? They have the biggest problem. What's that? Chati. They are feeling what? Dukkha. They are feeling what? Dukkha. And therefore, you should help them with your entire heart. Your heart, and give them your entire heart and soul. Because why? They are a mind that is suffering. Just like your minds have jati, their minds are also have jati. Therefore, they are also in a lot of what? Vexation. So use it as a vehicle. So whenever you associate anyone, or whenever you're by yourself, one part of your practice should be Ara Maitri. If you really think about this, every time you practice your path, it should always at one point turn into the Ara Maitri meditation, because you realize, when you're practicing, you realize the amount of suffering that you're in. And if you're in that much amount of suffering, then what about the person next to you? The person in front of you, behind you, the person that is, you know, in a different room. They are also the same. They are also the same. And if you have Ara Maitri to be a habit, something that you continue to practice, now no matter what anyone says, you can't be angry. Because why? You realize why they are saying this. You know, the Buddha's Dhamma is perfect in the beginning, middle and end. Because everything is connected to one another. You practice anicca, Ara Maitri will take place. You practice Ara Maitri, anicca will take place. You practice dukkha and anicca and Ara Maitri, and all of them are so connected because they're all talking about the core principles. They're talking about the nature of nature, and when you are talking about the nature of nature, then beings with minds. Then when you think about minds, the next thing comes in your head should be Ara Maitri. And then it's not merely just words. It isn't simply just words. May I and all beings in all worlds be free from the fire of birth, be free from the fire of decay. It shouldn't be just words. These should be feelings that are deeply rooted in the core of your heart. Because once you do that, you become like water. You become like water. Because if you think about this, does water choose who to help? You did some work, I don't know, let's say you were doing some work and you have your hands are muddy. When you wash your hands, does the water, if you're washing your hands, does the water like
avoid your hands.
When you wash your hands are dirty, right? It's got lots of germs, lot of lots of right? Does the water decide, what is this? I don't want that. And decide to change its direction. So water always falls downwards. But when you wash your hands, it falls sideways. Does it do that? No, because water is something that helps no matter what. Water is something that helps no matter what. You wash your hands with, let's say, you had the opportunity to deal with flower essence, right? You know, the essence of a flower, and your hands smell like roses and jasmines and whatnot. Now, when you wash your hands, does the water wash it extra? Does it go through your hand and then come back and go through again just twice, just in case it missed an area? No, water is something that will take an effect no matter who, no matter what. You wash this, it'll be washed. So if I took this water and poured it on this, it will go into this. If you put it onto an object or onto a person, water will be the same. We'll see them no differently. And there are objects that are, you know, water loving and water hating. Hydrophobic, hydrophilic. And that's okay with water. Does water think, oh, you know, this doesn't like me, so I'm not going to go near it? No, you put water will go. Depending whether this item wants it or not, that's the item's choice. But the water will help no matter what. See, we have to have the mindset of water. Mindset of, think about this, right? This water, you know, I remember, and lots of households as well, they have fish in a fish tank. I remember once, I think a friend of mine or an uncle of mine had come up to me and said, you know, why do you have fish in your home? Like, don't you think the fish would like a bigger fish tank? Right? Or, you know, you're trapping it in such a small area. If you were to put it into the ocean, don't you think the fish will be happier? Because why? They always, because we want to be, you know, we think that the fish wants to be free. That when it's in a cage, that it's trapped. But when water is in a bottle, is it trapped? Is this trapped? I don't know. We dig a hole, we put this bottle into this hole, and we put it into a time capsule, part of this? Now you put in a time capsule, and after 3 million years, you take out this bottle. Hopefully the glass is still there. And you open the bottle. Will the water go, I'm free at last? Like the genie? Yeah. No, right? The water will be the same. Whether you use it, you store it, water is the same. But when it comes to you, if this happens to you, now what? No. I can't. Don't put boundaries. Don't cage me in. I want to be free. Don't tell me to not do this or tell me to do this. I want my own decisions. See, water doesn't think that. See, we have to have the properties of water. Because an arahant's mind is basically like water. So, water is able to take the shape of its container. If I took this water and I spilled it onto the floor, it would try to take the shape of the container. But the container is too big for it to take shape, so it just lays like splat on the floor. You put it in a bottle, it'll be in a bottle. You put it into a cup, it's in a cup. Does the water complain? Whether you put it into a bottle or put it into a cup, when you are thirsty, you drink it. Aren't you going to feel that's the same amount of... isn't it going to quench the same amount of thirst? See, we have to have the mindset of water. And water is an essential part of life. Without water, no, you can say goodbye to all of life on Earth. Because water is essential. Without water, well, we won't be here. But does the water ask you to give it extra respect? So if I was to tell you, right, you know, you need water not just for, you know, the body, but you know, trees need water, you need water, I need water, bacteria need water, germs need water, viruses don't need water, but they need a host that needs water. That water is an essential key part of life. Should we put this on a pedestal and say, "Oh, water, how great you are! Please take my offerings of more water." No, because water doesn't require. Water will help do whatever it possibly can. Without thinking about what it's going to receive in the end. Because remember, once you wash something dirty with water, is the water clean? Is the water clean? Is the water clean? No, right? It's dirty, right? You sure? Are you sure? Water doesn't change. Water will always be water. Okay, water is not always going to be water. I take that back. Water will always have, will always stay, will always be clean. However, it has the great ability to trap dirt. Or to have dirt swimming with it. But water is clean. Whether you put, if you wash your hands with something, if you have something dirty in your hand, you wash it. The water isn't dirty. The water is still just water, but just has extra dirt in it. That's why you can filter it out. You filter it and you get what back? Dirty water? After you filter it, do you get dirty water? No, you still get water. For example, if you were to take all of your sweats, all of the water that's outputting from your body, and if you were to filter it, that water is perfect to drink. But when you think about it, sweat, no, sweat is not something that I should drink. But it is still water. If you filter it out, or even urine, if you filter it out, well, what you get back is what? Water. What does water think? You know, I'm in a pure form here. When I go through the body, I become defiled. I don't like going through bodies, so don't drink me. Does water ever say that? No, water is as flexible as it possibly can be. It's part of nature. All of nature's like this. All of nature's like this. Except one thing. All of nature accepts nature except one thing. What's that? What's that? All of nature accepts nature except one thing. What's that? Minds. A defiled mind is also part of nature, but it does not accept nature. See, I remember growing when you hear these stories of, you know, these hippie people saying, you know, we have to be one with nature. And I remember I have said to some of these people that they're crazy, you know, that they're stupid and then all this. But now I'm also the person saying, you know what, we have to be one with nature. Meaning we have to take the mind to become nature. We have to let the mind become nature. Because that is the quality of of, we have to get, let it become like nature, and then nature will take its role. So that's the thing. Whether this is coming back to where we started, we have to have our Maitri, right? We have to have this noble metta, something that's inside of our practice, something that we practice day in and day out. Is it something that we practice? It's something that should be inside of us, day in and day out. Whenever you are practicing, it should be a part of it. Shouldn't it? Okay. Let's take the example of going into this cold shower. Again, while you're practicing this, our Maitri should also be at play here. What? May I and all beings in all worlds be free from cold showers? Is that how you should practice metta there? Our Maitri there? Noble metta there? Is that how you should practice? May I and all beings in all worlds be free from may I and all beings in all worlds be free from mellum? May I and all beings in all worlds be free from Karavila, right? Bitter God. May I and all beings in all worlds be free from... No. That's not... How am I... So, you know, it's you know, wishing other people things, you know, not having... This is not the answer. May I and all beings in all worlds be free from standing in front of a stage and giving and giving a speech like I am. No, that's not what you should wish. Because is it bitter God that's the fault? Is it Mellum that's the fault? Is it anything at fault? Or is it simply just ignorance and attachment? Simply just ignorance and attachment. So may I and all beings in all worlds be free from ignorance and attachment. There you go. Because when you practice, when you truly internalize the idea that other minds with ignorance and attachment are as you know, they suffer just like you. They are vexating just like you. Now, no matter what anyone does, you're truly okay with it. Okay? Someone comes in and they're very rowdy, right? And they push you over. What are you feeling? May this mind attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Someone shouts something, someone screaming at you, oh, why did you do this? Why did you do that? In your mind, what should you feel? May this mind attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. I remember a monk had told me this several months back, or maybe years back, maybe. And he's like, you know, I used to wish the same thing. I used to wish, you know, may other people attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. But the reason I wish that is because when they attain Nibbana, they are no longer. So my problem will be disappeared. My problem will disappear because why? They are no longer going to be, they will no longer exist. But that's not, but technically you're wishing for the same thing. Except you're wishing, may I and this mind attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Whenever you see anyone, can't you wish that? So I know it's easier to practice the path for other people than yourself, right? It's easier to practice the path for other people. So for example, you see someone who is, you know, under all this vexation. you can see that and you can practice the path for them. But when it comes to yourself, it's difficult, right? Practicing the path for when you see someone else who is going through vexation, you know that. So give them the wish. Become like water and extinguish their fire. Become like water and extinguish the fire. Because why? Water has the quality of what? Extinguishing fires. Water has the quality of what? Cooling you down. So you become like water. Sometimes when someone is upset, sometimes the best thing is not to say anything. Out of what? Out of noble metta. You don't say anything. Because why? If you say something, sometimes the problem will become worse. For example, this is something that happens in lots of lives. A person comes and usually when two people come and then one of them has a problem and they say, why did you do this? And the answer the other person gives is, because it's anicca. So for example, someone's, don't ask me where this example comes from, right? Someone is sweeping and they leave the broom on the floor. Right? Someone comes up and asks, why is the broom on the floor? And the person says, it is wrong, yes, but you do know it's anicca, right? That it's a sense that it's in the wrong place. Sometimes this isn't the right answer. It is the right answer. However, the wrong time and the wrong place. Sometimes the best thing to do is say nothing. Especially when someone's angry, best thing to do is say nothing. Wait for them to calm down. Wait for them to come to a state of semi-anger. Then you can talk to them. But you all know when you are angry, when someone comes up and tells you that you're wrong, does that extinguish your anger? Mothers out there, right? When you get angry at your child and your child says, Amma, you're wrong, do you say, Ah, puta, am I wrong? Okay. Or do you say, Ah, puta, am I wrong? And you pick up whatever's next to you. Because when someone is angry, the best thing to do is to stay quiet. So something that I've seen lots of others do, especially our monks. When someone is in a problem, sometimes the way they enter, they help the other person, is by agreeing. So, this person is such a bad person because they did this to me, they did that to me, and you'll see them go, yeah, right? They're such a bad person. Na-na-na-na. What are they trying to do? They're trying to calm you down so they can say, after a while, they'll be like, but you do know that this and this and this and this. But for that to happen, you need to be in a state of calm. So therefore, sometimes they will agree. I feel that the Dhamma is always wrong. And you see them go, it could be, right? And afterwards they go like, no, that's not, it's something, this is the reason why you feel that. But they will always try to calm you down before telling you something. Because why? We know when the mind is vexed, are we willing and are we open to hear? So this thing, when you see someone who is struggling with their battles, with their defilements, sometimes the best thing to do is step back and let it happen. For example, like if it's wrong, you do tell them it's wrong. Don't get me wrong. If someone does something wrong, please do tell them they're wrong. But sometimes to tell them they're wrong on the spot is the worst thing to do. Sometimes the best thing to do is to wait for the situation to slowly reside, and then you go take them to a side and you tell them, you know, I saw this happen, this was wrong. The rain is cold. The rain is cold, right? It's freezing cold. The rain is wet. Very wet. Don't go to the rain, because rain is wet. So that's the thing. Something that we have to continuously put into action is, okay, we have to think, speak, and act. With what? Noble metta. Think, speak, and act. These three things we should continuously do to the maximum we possibly can. Think with noble metta. So when you're practicing the path and you come up with when you're solving your problems, take a moment to think that other beings, other minds out there are facing the same problem. They all these beings have ignorance and attachment, and because of that, are they feeling these sort of problems? May they be free from ignorance and attachment. May they be free from jati. May they be free from the fires. And speak with Aramaitri. Speak with noble metta. Whenever you say something, say. Whenever you tell something to someone, make sure you are giving it with noble metta. Make sure you are giving it to the maximum you possibly can with noble metta. Making sure it doesn't hurt their feelings. And act. Act to noble metta. See, these are the things that we have to do. Day in, day out. This is part of our practice. Every single day, your noble metta should increase. You should feel more metta every single day. Not the same as you felt today that you feel tomorrow. You feel next week, next month. Every day your noble metta should increase. That's when you know you're on the right track. Because you feel compassionate. You feel metta towards others. So if I was to give a quick recap of what we talked about today. Today we talked about, we started off by talking about what? To make a mistake, error is human. And forgiveness is divine. Whenever anyone makes a mistake. You know they say forgive and forget? You don't need to forget. Why? Forgetting? Well, you shouldn't attribute the mistake to a person. So you don't need to forgive and forget. Just forgive. And forgetting will always automatically be part of that. And also we talked about where the water is wet. So today, when you go out, I don't think the rain will die down anytime soon. Ask yourself, is the rain wet? Is the rain cold? If it rains one day and it feels warm, should you be surprised? You go out and the rain, normally rain is cold, but if you were to go out and the rain is actually warm, should you be surprised? Should you? You shouldn't be surprised, because why? Cold, hot is part of what?
part of mental perceptions. It's part of the mental perception. Whether this is cold or whether this is hot is part of your mental perception. For example, there are people who can't feel heat. There are some people who can't feel pain, which is dangerous because the body needs to feel pain. So there are certain conditions where your pain receptors in the body don't work. And so when they are doing anything, their body is in trouble. So I remember reading being told a story about a person who can't feel pain. Literally, you can take a hammer and like hit the hammer onto their hand, and you can see the hand deform, but the person would just look at it and go, "Oh, okay, doctor, fix me." But not because they feel pain, because pain is needed. Pain is part of the body. Pain is very important. So the person, I think it was something that someone has told me that when they're cooking, so there was a person like this, she was cooking something, her hand was on the burner, and she was cooking. Only because she smelled something off, did she look and say, "Ah, I burned my hand. What am I going to do about this?" And goes to hospital and get its bandage. We always think that pain is bad, right? We always have this idea that pain is bad. Is pain bad? Is pain bad? You see, bad, good, everything is what? Cause and effect. Everything, so that's the thing, the body is a perfect piece of nature. The more you look at yourself as a machine, or look at the body as a process, the more amazed you become of it. Amazed meaning is not like you go, "Oh, wow, the body works in such amazing ways." It's that you understand that there is no you involved. There is no you involved. That the entire body is cause and effect. So, and also we talked about three questions. Three questions that you have to continue to ask yourself, which were who, why, and how. Whenever you do something, whether it's walking to Dakineyu, right? Proceeding the Buddha Puja, holding the umbrellas, the pearl umbrellas, whether it's, you know, having arms, right? When you're eating, ask yourself these three questions. When you go back home, when you take a shower, when you wake up in the morning, brush your teeth, make your way to the monastery, have breakfast, listen to a sermon, listen to this, listen to that. Ask yourself these three questions. Who, why, and how? That is the practice. And finally, we talked about, you know, being like water. Practicing Aramaitri and being like water. Just like this bottle, this water in the bottle. To be like this. Because water is part of nature. It has the ability to extinguish fires. Has the ability to change according to its environment, and it has the ability to not to complain. Because why? It's able to change, able to accept nature for nature. We also have to be able to what? Accept nature for nature. Right. So as your task for this week, I'll always give you tasks. Whether or not you do it, that's not it's not my responsibility whether you do it or not. Because I can take the horse to the watering hole, but I can't make the horse drink. Right? So I'll give you tasks. Every week I'll give you a task to do. Whether you do it or not, it's in your hands. But I know one thing. Whenever I tell you to do something, I do it. I do what I say, and I say what I do. Because what's the point of coming up here and lying? You know, I can fly. No, you will never hear any of our monks tell you something that they don't do, or they'll never say what they do. They will never not say what they do or not do what they say. Every single monk, not just monks, all of you, I sincerely know that all of you are the same. Because why? We are all children from the same father, aren't we? So, your task for this week, whenever you're doing any sort of activity, whenever you do any sort of activities, right? Minimum, we'll be nice. Minimum 7, at least 7 activities. While doing 7 activities, so one a day, ask yourself these 3 questions. Who, what, and how? Ask yourself these questions. At least one a day. Actually, let's make it a bit more harder. Twice a day. Right? Twice a day. So by the end of, by next week, you should have 14. But 14 is not a round number, is it? 14 is not. Okay, we'll give it a good, nice, round number. See, 14 doesn't seem round, right? 15 seems round. 15 then. So you can either do 2 a day plus 1, or 3 for 5 days. It's your choice. 15. 15 times. Ask yourself who, what, who, why, and how. And something that lots of, I think even you will do as well, but everyone in Monastery does, is we do ticks. There's a reason why there's ticks. That's why you'll never be told to cross something out. I mean, like this. It's always a tick. Why do you think we use ticks? Why do you think we use ticks? Because since we were little, we like seeing this. Psychologically, we all love seeing this. That's why tick. It's always nice to tick. As like, you know when you have like a massive to-do list, the feeling of crossing something out, very pleasurable, right? You have 10 things to do, you do one of them, and you cross one of them out. It feels good, right? Use that. Yes, that's vexation. Yes, that's pleasure. Yes, it's the relief from vexation that gives you pleasure. I agree. But you can use this for your own benefit. Because we like ticks. Use ticks, therefore we're more prone to take the next one. So if you don't do something, just leave it blank. Don't cross it. Leave it blank. Because then you can be happy by thinking, at least it's a blank square. If it was crossed, that seems bad. So tick it. 15 times. You should have 15 ticks by next week. Right. So practice that. Practice and practice and practice. Our time is very limited. So practice. Because we don't know when or what or how things will happen. Before they do, practice. And you'll be And when something does happen, you'll be able to accept nature. Right. Let's take a few moments to transfer merits and conclude. Let's take a few moments to transfer all the merits we required by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirith's Listen Dharma, and engaging in various meritorious deeds today. So first and foremost, let's remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be received Lord Buddha's teachings. And with immense gratitude, let's transfer the merits to Bhikshu Bhikshuni Upasakas Upasakas, who since time immemorial have protected, preserved the sublime teaching of the Buddha and passed it down to a generation of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, to understand, to comprehend Dhamma. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to all the members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including all including all pillars of all chapters, who have dedicated their lives to no path and committed themselves to the betterment of all sentient beings. Let's not forget, among them will be the monks and nuns residing in local temples and nunneries, who have always been by your side, through thick and thin, come rain or shine. So stay more and transfer merits to Guru Sannansi, as well as other monks resident at the monastery, as well as Anagarikas attached to the monastery. So let's take a moment to express our gratitude to those who made great effort to disseminate the teaching of the Buddha, be thereby transliterating sermons, sharing them out with others, inviting others to join them. May the power of merits, if any have been born in the willful plane, may they redeem themselves in born in the blissful plane. May by the power of merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the willful path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer all the merits we require to our devotees, friends of the monastery who, for sake of merits, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes any of you who contribute to the construction of the monastery, to those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, roads, medicines, as well as those who pass on know-how in their well wishes. May by the power of these merits, may they abstain from meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble path, and then attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer our merits to our mothers, fathers, husbands and wives, brothers, sisters, sons, daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews, nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employees, to all those who helped us, supported us, assisted us in any shape or form. By the power of these merits, may they be healed in physical and mental ailments, may they overcome any obstacles in their spiritual progress, may they obtain from meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. This also take a moment to transfer merits to the devas, brahmins, spirits, demons, primarily Sakadeva, as well as human gods and deities, who have committed to protect and fulfill the summons of the sasana. This also take a moment to transfer merits to our garden deities, who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May through the power of these merits, may they prosper in divine power and wisdom, may they abstain from our meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the way for path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. This also take a moment to transfer merits to our ancestors, who have predeceased us, to all that has been friends and family to us in this even long journey to samsara. Let's take a moment to transfer merits to the police forces, was the armed forces, was the police forces who sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all those who lost life in the war be their friend or foe. Rejoice in the merits required today. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to all those who lost their lives in natural calamities such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides, pandemics, reminding ourselves among them, will be those who have been friends and family to us in the long journey to samsara. May the power of merits, if anything born in the willful plane, may they redeem themselves in born in the blissful plane. May by the power of merits, may they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the willful path, and attain supreme bliss in Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, let's all resolve, may the power and blessing of all the merits required for the day. We've been witness the event of many hundreds of thousands of Arhat Nuvansis, Arhat Mahin Nuvansis, in this red land itself. And finally, may through all the paths required today, may you and I and everyone who made this program a success become Arhat Nuvansi or Arhat Mahin Nuvansi in this very life in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. The Mahasangha will now extend their blessings to you. Raga ginnen midatnva, dvesha ginnen midatnva, moha ginnen midatnva,
Nibbhan param sukhayin sukita taravitva. Nibbhan param sukhayin sukita taravitva. Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satvayo. Nibbhan param sukhayin sukita taravitva. Nibbhan param sukhayin sukita taravitva. Nibbhan param sukhayin sukita taravitva. Raga gini niveva, desha gini niveva, moha gini niveva, nivan sepa labeva. Nivan sepa labeva. Nivan sepa labeva. Tunrangi. Susiyanantam haangkuni bilim. Sir loka sir sati yoga. Nibbhana pamasukin sukharavitta. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.